are going to talk with the co-producer of the popular TV show Mad Men this hour about the secrets of advertising. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Companies in the United States will spend $140 billion on advertising in 2015. We'll talk about the hows and whys of the advertising industry, and our guest will help you, anyone for that matter, who is trying to persuade someone to buy something or believe something, to do your job better. And we will welcome your questions for him. We'll welcome your thoughts about the power of advertising. Do you trust advertising? What do you think makes a successful advertising campaign? Are there commercials or advertisements that have stood out to you as being especially good or bad? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Josh Weltman, a 25-year veteran of the advertising business. He has created commercials for Microsoft, Whole Foods, BMW, and many other companies. He is co-producer of Mad Men, the Emmy Award-winning show on AMC. And he is the author of Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So why did you decide to share your secrets in a book?
I decided to share my secrets in the book because after working on the show for 3 years, one of the other co-producers, there's a number of co-producers, and there was one other advertising consultant. His name is Bob Levinson. And he was commenting about how interested people were about the business stories that we were helping to develop. And people seem really fascinated by the workings of the agency. The show obviously isn't about advertising. It just takes place in an advertising agency. But, you know, it was happening at the same time that social media was kind of blowing up, and people were questioning whether traditional advertising was still relevant, you know, in the world of Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And they were watching the show and seeing sort of the tools and techniques that big companies used years ago to persuade people and sell products and build brands and that sort of thing. And I think as people were doing it themselves or feeling that they could sort of do it themselves on Twitter and Facebook and sort of manage their own brand, they were really fascinated to see the ins and outs and workings of professional players who used to do this years ago. And so I took what I knew and what sort of lessons I had gleaned doing the job for 25 years for big Fortune 500 companies and tried to put it in language and terms that people could understand about you know, building their own reputation online or building brands for their own companies using social media and other tools at their disposal. Yeah.
So is traditional advertising still relevant in this day of social media?
Yeah, I think so. I say in the book that I think there are four, or at least there were four kinds of advertisements that I used consistently over 25 years to produce business results for my clients, or I found that everything that produced business results could sort of be put in one of four buckets, meaning I was either creating an ad to introduce a product to try and temporarily bump sales or traffic, to differentiate a product or service from the others out there, or to try and identify what type of people found this product or service interesting, meaning that the ad was more about the consumer of a product or service than it was about the product or service themselves. And that, those kind of ads were trying to answer a question people have about advertising or about products and services, which is, who else thinks it's good? And I think social media is fantastic for answering the question, who else thinks this product or service is good? That's what sort of Yelp is based on. That's what, social media campaigns are really all about. That's what online influencers are about. But that's just one relevant question that people have, or fundamental question people have before they or ask themselves or ask companies before they buy products or services. The others are, you know, what is this thing? Why do I need it now? And what makes it different? So I think social media is really good for answering one of those questions, who else thinks it's good. I don't think it's particularly great for answering the other three.
Uh-huh. So when you may not have personally named the book, but Seducing Strangers, do you see the advertising business as a form of seduction?
Yeah, I do. I think that selling is kind of about pricing and placement and getting the word out. But I think seducing is about figuring out what people want to hear about themselves and adjusting your message to that. I think that's what seduces people. I think when companies get to the level of sort of beyond salesmanship and into seduction, they're really talking more about their customers and their audience than they are about their own products and services. It's like that point in a relationship when you say, well, enough about me, let's talk about you.
Can you define seduction when it comes to advertising?
I think seduction is figuring out what people want to hear. I'll give you an example. Many years back, my partner and I were asked to sort of rework the Doritos snack chip campaign, because the client found that after trying to sell Doritos as a healthy snack food to moms for a number of years, things had sort of stalled out because teenage kids were the people eating Doritos, and they didn't really care about, you know, fresh corn and, you know, tomato paste and you know, sea salt and all the ingredients. What we found out was that teenagers really didn't think of Doritos at all as food. They sort of viewed them as oral entertainment. And so instead of listing all the ingredients and why they were a healthy, good snack food so that moms would be interested, we started talking about what the people who were actually using the product were interested, which is, why is it that sometimes I go to the market and find myself paying for an empty bag, you know, because I've eaten the whole things before I got there? We talked about nothing but sort of social situations and entertaining ideas, you know, and we did this through the spokesperson of Jay Leno, who was great at talking about people's foibles and how they work anyhow. And it really did seduce the audience because it was talking about them, not about the product. Uh-huh. It was talking about how they behaved, what they wanted, how they behaved with their friends, and things that they could recognize. And that's what made it seductive.
Yeah, let me play a clip from one of your Jay Leno Dorito.
Oh, really?
Commercials.
Wow,
yeah, Caleb Blato, my producer, pulled this one.
There are those that say these young people have no future. Is there any hope, or are they all truly incorrigible? What are you in for, son?
Talking.
Talking. Future con man. And you?
Passing notes.
Potential inside trader. And what's your crime?
Eating.
Eating? Say, those wouldn't be nacho cheese flavored Doritos brand tortilla chips, would they?
Yes, sir.
The ones with the irresistibly tangy cheese crunch?
Yes, sir.
A future president of the United States, Mr. President.
Nacho cheese Doritos. They taste as good as they crunch.
So I think that this was in
that was
high school detention.
We redid it.
Oh, so yeah. This is then you changed it from Doritos taste great to you'll have fun eating Doritos.
No. The tagline we were using was "Crunch all you want, we'll make more."
Ah,
that's what Jay had been the spokesperson for Doritos for I think 2 years before we came on it, and he was he really wanted to talk more about what was going on with the people he was working with, and he wanted the ads to sound more like his comedy. And when we presented the tagline "Crunch all you want, we'll make more," I think it took the client maybe 2 days to think, well, do you think people will mean that we'll make more money? And we said, of course not. You know, they'll understand. We're just talking about making more corn chips.
Yeah, and so that was a successful tagline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We are talking with Josh Weltman. He is the author of Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling, the Little Black Book of Advertising Secrets. Josh is one of the co-producers of Mad Men. He helps make Don Draper the star character who works in an advertising agency authentic. And we welcome your thoughts, your questions. Maybe you have questions for him about Mad Men, but maybe you have some thoughts on what you think makes an ad successful. What ads work or don't work for you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network.
Well, technology is a glittering lure, but there's the rare occasion when the public can be engaged on a level beyond flash if they have a sentimental bond with the product.
That's the character Don Draper, star character of the Mad Men TV show. Our guest is the co-producer of Mad Men and author of the new book, Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling. And Josh, was Don right there about sentimental ads appealing to customers?
Oh, yeah, I think he was definitely right for the show and the scene at that time. And you know, he did what he needed to do to sell that slide projector. Sure.
Yeah. So what is it? That's part of why you're co-producing, is that you're able to, I don't know, lend authenticity to the work that we're seeing being done in the advertising agency?
Yeah, I think that our job as advertising consultants on the show is to find business stories and advertising stories that can help illustrate what's going on emotionally inside the characters who work at the agency. You know, whether it's Don or Peggy or the account executives, Pete and Roger, or, you know, the office manager turned account executive, Joan Holloway. What we're looking for is business stories that let us see into the sort of private world of emotional world of each of these characters. As an example, I think that carousel scene, you know, it was the last episode of the first season, and Matt Weiner wanted a business story that would let the audience know what Don was feeling about his marriage and his brother's suicide and the state of his business and all that sort of thing, or everything that we'd seen happen. And we felt that the pitching a slide projector would be a great way, because, you know, Don could fill that slide projector with pictures that he'd taken from his own life. I'm listening to the voiceover of the little clip you played, but I remember, you know, and the images are sort of burned into my head like they are with so many people and fans of the show. But when you're hearing Don talk about the slide projector, you're seeing pictures of him and his wife, Betty, and you're seeing pictures of his children and important moments in his life. And so it was really something that the nature of the product allowed Don to put literally his heart and soul into the pitch and show us what he was thinking about all those things.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't translate quite the same way on radio.
It's not quite the same on radio. It works a little bit better on TV, but that's okay.
Let's go to Jennifer in Madison, who joins us. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, I actually work for a women's magazine in Madison called Brava, and I work in advertising sales, so this is part and parcel of what I do every day. And one of the things that we really talk to people about is the fact that advertising builds a relationship. 87% of consumer decisions these days are made by women. And we all know that through social media, everybody is used to being marketed to. And people, are honestly have their guard up a little bit more. They don't want to be marketed to in a way that's, that feels demeaning or is kind of a one-shot deal. So one of the things that we really talk about is building a rapport with the people that you're trying to reach. So we look at, how do we leverage relationships and how is advertising a part of building relationships with consumers so you're not just talking about a one-shot, when you talk about seduction, we're not talking about a one-shot deal. We're talking about building a relationship so the consumer always has that company as top of mind.
Mm-hmm. Josh?
Oh, I agree with that sort of wholeheartedly. I think that the whole point of advertising is to build a relationship. I think it kind of happens in four parts. I think it's a process of taking a product or service that no one has heard about or cares about, and over time, with a series of different types of messages, turning that product or service into something that someone somewhere can't imagine their life without. So it is a relationship-building process. It begins with an introduction. It begins with sort of a trial. Then on to explaining to to a customer or prospect or consumer what's different about that product or service. And finally, it's about maintaining that relationship by reminding that customer that the company shares their values, hopes, dreams, and aspirations.
Yeah. So Jennifer works for a magazine, print. I'm on radio, obviously, and Mad Men is on TV. And what can you talk a little bit about if advertising is approached differently for the different media?
I think different media are all particularly good at one thing or another. Television is great at sort of creating emotional relationships with customers. It's sort of the opera of our time. There's music, visuals, scripted drama and all those things, and it's great for relationships. I love radio, especially for local news information, that sort of sales and opportunities. I love magazines because I think they're the best place to sort of side-by-side compare products and services. The first thing you do when you're looking for a new car is go out and get a copy of Road and Track, or you start picking up the vertical magazine, the magazines that specialize in cars, for 6 or 7 months before you really decide to make a purchase. And I love just flipping through things and going back and forth and seeing sort of the tone of print ads and what companies are saying about their own product compared to what editors and journalists are saying. But I think magazines are really designed for that kind of third act of building a relationship with a customer group, which is explaining what makes a product and service different Nothing's better than that.
Yeah. You know, back to Jennifer's sort of specific issue that she says they deal with at this women's magazine in Madison is that they don't want to come across as though they are... They want to make sure people don't feel like they're being, I don't know, used or marketed to. can you accomplish that?
Oh, sure. Nobody likes to be sold to or talked at. They like to be engaged in the conversation, just the way you did 15 minutes ago, which was open the lines up to people with questions. Even magazines have to. People are used to that nowadays because their voices are heard all over social media, and that's part of the challenge of being a magazine today is figuring out how to include readers in the conversation where before you could there was no means. So even the television shows have sort of online forums and places where. Feedback and customers and users, the audience's opinion, are shared with the makers. I think that magazines, like everybody else, are learning to use social media to build the relationship with their audience.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Josh Weltman. He is the author of Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling, the Little Black Book of Advertising Secrets. Josh is also a co-producer of Mad Men. If you have a question for him or a thought about the advertising industry or what you think makes a particularly good or bad ad, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our next caller is Adam in Milwaukee. Hello, Adam.
Yes, hi. My name is Adam Fuller. I'm a small general contractor in Milwaukee, and I really like direct marketing because the leads that I do get to it, oftentimes I'm the only bidder. The problem that I have is I'll send out one or two postcards to a group of individuals, and 3 months later I see all this work getting done, and I was never called. And I'm curious to see, is it content that's more valuable, or is it simply repetition that's more valuable?
I think it's probably relationships that are more valuable. We get solicited by, or I personally get solicited by small contractors all the time in just the manner that you described. But my brother-in-law is our contractor, so there's really no amount of postcards any type of information that's going to sort of jeopardize that relationship that I already have with a contractor. And I think that at a certain point you might want to consider getting sending out cards that build a personal face-to-face relationship in between the job bid, something that just lets you know if people are thinking about doing something and open to whatever your specialty is. And maybe instead of going straight for the bid, maybe you'd like to gather 10, 12 people up and take them on a tour or something that you're particularly proud of, so they get to know you a little bit better. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's off the top of my head. But instead of going straight for the bid on a project, I'm saying try and send something out that leads to letting them find out more about you and begin a relationship that leads to a project.
Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Mary in Milwaukee. Hello, Mary.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to make a comment about the ad that came out from Chrysler that said imported from Detroit. I thought that was just brilliant. It was so simplistic, and I think it carried so much weight, and I just thought it was a really, really good advertising campaign.
And thank you, Mary, but you said it was simplistic, but what made it so good for you?
Well, because imported from Detroit, I mean, like, buy from your own backyard, you know, kind of thing, so.
Right.
That's what it.
All right, Josh, any comment on that?
Yeah, I liked it, too, for the same reason. I forgot that Detroit was such a specialized place and where cars come from until they reminded me, or where great American cars come from until they reminded me with that series of ads. I thought it was great, too.
You know, I wanted to ask you about something that's in the news. Bud Light is apologizing for a label that it put on. It's Bud Light bottles, and it was something along the lines of that Bud Light is the beer that was perfect for temporarily removing the word no from the drinker's vocabulary. You hadn't heard this. This is really just in the past week. The perfect beer for removing no from your vocabulary for the night. The ad company was saying, hey, we're trying to instill the feeling of spontaneity and having fun and have a good time. But when people saw on the label that somehow drinking beer was going to remove no from your vocabulary for the night, they thought this elicited images of possible date rape.
No question. It sounds exactly like what I would conclude if I read the same thing. I think the company could say that obviously the beer did exactly that to whoever approved the advertising campaign, and they probably shouldn't drink the beer before approving ideas like that.
Bud Light did apologize, and I believe has removed that label. And one spokesperson said, sometimes an entire marketing team can miss the obvious. I mean, what are your thoughts? That was just a huge mistake?
Yes, I think it proved that what they said was true.
Do you think that Budweiser can recover from something like this?
Sure. I think Budweiser is large enough and has made good on enough good promises over the course of years and years that they can make a mistake and make a foul promise every now and then and recover. You know, I think that's what being a big, responsible brand is about. And if you make a mistake, cop to it and change it and move on.
You know? Some people are skeptical of advertising. They feel it's dishonest. What's your response to that?
I think it's probably disappointing more than it is dishonest, because I think that my view of the purpose of advertising and what it does for both companies and consumers is that I think that happiness occurs when reality meets or exceeds expectations. And I think that advertising is one way that companies set expectations in the minds of people for their products and services to meet or exceed. You know, so when you let people know what to expect using advertising, and then you deliver a product or service that meets or exceeds those expectations, you get a happy customer. And sometimes advertising overpromises, and the products don't meet or exceed expectations, and people get disappointed. And sometimes people don't advertise at all, and companies don't advertise at all, and people don't know what to expect from the products and services, so they can't meet or exceed expectations, and they're still not happy. But I think that it's the combination of the advertising with how the product actually works and performs that makes people happy or disappointed. So I, you know, advertising is just the promise. It's hard to say that people can find a promise. Well, I guess a promise can be a lie. There's not a lot of percentage in companies lying. Usually, it's puffery or overpromising that people get upset about. And there's the more you understand about how advertising works, and how you can adjust expectations to fit what your product can do, the less reason there is to lie.
Yeah.
It's better when you sort of match the capabilities of the product and services with the promise in the mind of the customer.
Let's take another call from Randy in Middleton. Hello, Randy.
Hi, good morning. Before I ask my main question, I noticed on Mad Men that every time Don Draper turns on the TV, he has a remote in his hand. Was that possible in the 1960s?
Yeah, we have a number of people doing a lot of research about exactly what products can be used when in the timeline, what language, even what slang is used around the office. So I'm pretty sure that it's not my job to do it, but there's a whole bunch of people who spend a lot of time checking that stuff out, and I'm pretty sure that if you're seeing it on Mad Men, you'll find it's actually.
Yeah, we didn't have a remote at my house anyway, Randy, in the 60s.
There you go.
But it may be Don Draper's house, so he did.
Right, and the thing that interests me about this show is that you have a fictitious agency, but all their clients are real, and I'm just old enough to know that some of those campaigns were the actual campaigns at the time. Is that something that you're doing for Verisimilitude, and do you have the cooperation of the actual ad agencies that did those campaigns?
Well, not all the clients are real. Some we make up, like Peggy advertised a lipstick that was made up called Belle Jolie, and we made up the campaign for that. And most of the campaigns that we deal with in the show are made up and designed, you know, for the show. Sometimes they're real products, but the campaigns that we invent are invented by Matt and the other writers of the show, and myself and the other advertising consultants, and usually they're pretty particular to the story of the show. Is there one campaign that you remember that you remember seeing,
Randy?
Not that comes to my mind right now.
We had another caller. Let me interrupt. We had another caller who said that there was, and I'm not sure. I think it's a real ad agency. A caller thought that McCann Erickson was being trashed.
Oh yeah, of course. McCann Erickson is a real ad agency. Yeah. One of the fun things is having our fictional advertising agency of Sterling Cooper or Sterling Cooper Draper Price interact with both real advertising agencies and agencies that we make up for the course of the show or for the story of the show, like Cutler Gleason Shaw.
So, Randy, was that what you were referring to?
Well, also, I seem to remember that there was a breakfast cereal that they had.
We did a advertising campaign for Life, which is a real breakfast cereal, but the campaign that we used on air was made up for the show. But Don did pitch and have Life cereal for a while.
Oh boy, did you have something different than Mikey? He Hates Everything.
Yeah, because the pitch and the advertising we did was supposed to be happening about 5 years before the Mikey campaign.
Okay. We are talking with the author of Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling. Josh Weltman is also a co-producer of Mad Men. And we welcome your questions for him about Mad Men, but talk more about the effectiveness of advertising and what makes an effective advertising campaign or a successful ad. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Which color did you like?
I didn't get the one I liked. Someone took my color.
Why didn't you choose another one?
I'm very particular.
As opposed to the other girls?
I don't know. I don't think anyone wants to be one of 100 colors in a box.
So, from Mad Men. Our guest is co-producer of Mad Men, Josh Weltman, author of Seducing Strangers. We played that clip, Josh, because it, I think it brings up one of your points when it comes to successful advertising. That was Peggy Draper talking about her lipstick choice. And
yeah.
Talk some about that. I mean, it was she doesn't want to be just one of 100 colors in a box. The personalization.
Well, I think to your point before you took the break, nobody likes to be sold to and think of themselves as kind of a tool in somebody's marketing plan. You know, people respond negatively to advertising that is not for them. You know, maybe it's interrupting their show, and it's not speaking to them for one reason or another. They may not even be the intended target of the advertising. But everybody likes to feel that they've discovered a product or service that seems just right for them. You know, that's the job of the advertiser, is to make people feel like they're part of the process, that they're discovering something that's uniquely for them.
And can an ad create individuality?
Create individuality? No, I don't think ads create individuality, but I think that some ads speak to individuality or people who value individuality. I think that the one that pops into mind immediately is a ad campaign that Apple ran about 10 years ago. Yeah, right. Celebrating people who think different, you know, who don't want to go along with the crowd. Now, they ran that ad when they had about 3% of the operating system market, and Microsoft controlled about 92%. So if you were going to buy an Apple at that time in the world, you had to think different. You had to be okay with zigging when the whole market was zagging, you know, and so they had to celebrate that.
Yeah, and how about think outside the bun?
Yeah, I like that. That's exactly the same thing. I've worked a lot in the fast food industry, and I think probably about 90 cents of every fast food dollar is spent on a hamburger or something like that. I remember figures from almost 15 years ago. It's probably changed a little bit, but you'd be surprised how much fast food money goes to buying a hamburger. And Taco Bell, which was a client that I had years and years ago, has always been an alternative to another hamburger. And I think that's a great tagline for them.
And that was also a way to, as you talked about the four different types of ads, or the
right,
four different goals, that's one way to inspire loyalty by differentiating
sure,
your company from another company.
Right. That's exactly right. The tagline is always, you know, put your promise to the market in 7 or 10 words or something like that. And I think outside the bun is exactly why Taco Bell exists in the marketplace. You know, how many burgers can you eat? You know, you got to change it up every now and then.
Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee next. Hello, Tom.
Oh, good morning. Morning. I guess I've been a advertising photographer for about close to 40 years here, and one of the things I remember people saying is design, good design is no accident. And I think the same is for advertising. You know, good advertising is no accident. And that proves the point that you guys were saying. I guess what I wanted to ask, how do you see the changes in the advertising market over the last 10 years or maybe even the last 20 since desktop publishing became so popular? And I'll listen to you on the radio.
All right. Changes you've seen in the last 10 years, especially with desktop publishing, Josh?
Yeah, I think most of this stuff has sort of compressed the time that people allow or give agencies and creative folks like Tom, the photographer, to develop advertising. Before desktop publishing, before you could show a client exactly what the ad was going to look like when they paid for it, they sort of had to project, and we sort of had to take them along in stages. We would show somebody a rough sketch and then a more finished comp, and then finally we would go out and take the pictures and then put that together. And now with desktop publishing and being able to pull scrap off the internet, you know, or what we call scrap or reference photos and stuff like that, to show clients and show prospects exactly what the ad will look like when they run it. It sort of takes a little bit of that gestation imagination out of the process. You know, things would go along and you'd change it or you'd come along with a better idea or you know, the photographer would bring something to the party. And I think that desktop publishing has kind of flattened that process and maybe taken a little bit of the inspiration and accident out of the process of developing advertising and communications.
Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I wanted to say that decades ago, a cosmetic company called Olay started producing a series of commercials. And at the end of them, the young lady who was demonstrating these products looked out into the audience saying, well, we may cost more, but you're worth it. And ever since then, more and more companies have jumped on this phrase, you're worth it, especially all the attorneys who are just overwhelming us with ads about we're going to get the best settlement for you because you're worth it. And I think that one of the indirect or maybe direct ways that this has influenced America is that people have gotten more and more greedy. Most people, it seems, have to line up when Jobs has announced a new phone. They're lining up at 2 o'clock in the morning ahead of time to be the first in line to get this phone because so many people now feel they have to have the biggest and the best and the first, above all the first, because they're worth it. And the whole philosophy of America, I think, has changed, perhaps partly because of that one little phrase in that ad decades ago, that you're worth it.
Oh, well, interesting. Josh, it's all your fault.
Yeah, it's all my fault.
Why would an advertiser, you know, I mean, I can see that when you say you're worth it, that makes you kind of think, yeah, darn it, I am.
Sure. I think I agree with part of what the caller was saying, but I'm not sure it's caused by the advertising. I think that the advertising usually reflects attitude changes that have gone on before they make the ad. But I think definitely for a long time, and I believe there was just a survey that I saw last week that said, and maybe it was in a David Brooks column, where he said that years ago when surveyed people asked if they were special or not, very few, maybe 35%, said they thought they were a unique or special person. And today, upwards of 75-80% of people, when asked, believe they're special and unique and I guess worth it. You know, so I think that line reflects the change that's happened over the years in Americans, where people used to be okay with being sort of just a a decent member of society, that today they do feel that they deserve or have to think of themselves as unique or special or worth it to be an American.
Yeah. Can you, in a short amount of time, tell us how in the world Apple does get us to camp out for a day or two to get the latest iPhone?
They make great stuff, and they make compelling promises, and they deliver on that those promises again and again and again and again. You know, I think they're a great company, and they truly understand the mechanics of advertising, brand building, product development, and design. And that's how they do it.
Yeah, now, which brings up an interesting point. If they weren't such a great company and they had a crummy product, you might be able to sell it, but it's not gonna last, right?
Right. That's Bill Birnbach said that in the 60s. He said, nothing kills a bad product quicker than great advertising, which is if you make a compelling promise to a lot of people and then fail to deliver on it, your days are numbered. But Apple makes compelling promises and then delivers, you know, and they do it again and again and again and again.
Jack on Facebook says, speaking of over-promising, I bought a food processor that proclaimed, never touch a knife again. But then the first line in the instructions read, cut food into small pieces and feed into hopper. Obviously, the person writing the copy never saw the product. Well, there you go.
That's exactly the point. They didn't have to overpromise to get Jack to buy the food processor. They just set themselves up for disappointment when they say things like that.
Yeah. Well, we only have about a minute or so to go. What is the takeaway that you hope readers take away or listeners take away from this program about seducing strangers?
Oh, I think they should take away the address of the website, which is seducingstrangers.com, and if they're interested in the art of persuasion and how it works today, go take a look at the book, peruse the inside, find out if there's anything that might be able to help you do what you do. If what you're trying to do is use word pictures, stories, or music to get someone somewhere to do something, take a look. There may be some useful stuff in there for you.
So in our final minute, Mad Men is in its final season, yes? Can you tell us what's going to happen?
No, I absolutely can't tell you what's going to happen. There's only two more episodes, and I would be shot by a team of lawyers in a matter of minutes if I told you what was going to happen.
I thought that would be your answer. All right, thanks.
All right.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. It's been great.
Josh Weltman is the author of Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling. He is co-producer of Mad Men. Thanks very much to Caleb Lato and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, we will speak with an author about how to roadmap your life. That's coming up tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.